Good evening.
Good evening.
Welcome back. Welcome back. You've been missed. Both of you. And Diane, it's great to see you again. How was the Shuso ceremony?
It was very nice. I was going to mention it in the announcements. We can do it now if you'd like.
Tell us.
Yes, we had a Shuso ceremony for Eric Remington. And I'm confused about something. Why is it there's been a Shuso ceremony and a Shosan?
It's just that the teacher does the Shosan and the student does the Shuso.
So this says Eric was the student.
He was the student.
I see, okay. But it's the same.
It's the same thing. It's okay. Just a training thing for the student to learn how to be a teacher.
Yeah, so it was very nice. We had a nice turnout. And it capped a very interesting and somewhat eventful week. I won't go into it with Ajikoji. It was a very nice week, though. And I had the privilege of asking him a question on your behalf.
Good.
Which I can reveal the answer to. Your question to Eric was, hang on. Yes, okay, it was, you know who you are, who are all these others? And his answer after about half a second was, you probably know. his answer after a second or so was, they're all me. Which seems appropriate and right and suitable.
Yeah.
It was great fun.
Thank you for doing that, Nico.
Thank you for asking me. It's very nice. Thank you.
Well, tonight we are launching a new book. This is our book, Genjo Koan. It's the commentary by Shohaku Okamura, who is a student of it goes back to Antaiji, where Koban used to sit zazen with Okamura's teacher, whose name I'm forgetting right now, who has done commentaries on Dogen. So this is Okamura's very keen way of looking at the Genjo Koan. It was a very early piece that Dogen wrote, and then he rewrote it much later in his life to make sure that it got clear for everybody. And it's really a, in a nutshell, the whole of his teaching, and really of the teaching, of Buddha's teaching, and anyone who has come to this kind of insight.
Uchiyama,
thank you. Uchiyama Roshi. And Kodo Sawaki was the teacher before Uchiyama Roshi. And Koban sat with both of them. And Uchiyama Roshi actually asked him to come and practice at Antaiji, just throw away everything and just come and be with them. And instead he went to Aheiji and practiced as a monk there. So there's a connection. And of course, our connection through the lineage is with Dogen in any case. So it's very nicely done because he tells about Dogen just enough so that we have a sense of who he is, the mind, or at least the background of the mind that gave us these insights. He was, he came from a very important family, and alas, his parents died when he was quite young. He was 8 when his mother passed away, and he was there and watched the incense burning down in the silence of her passing away. And he saw the ash falling off and falling off, and had a powerful feeling of how tenuous life is, and wanted to be a monk, even at the age of 8. He went to live with an uncle and was sent to a monastery at the age of 13. So he studied at the monastery on the mountain, Mount Hiei, which is right behind Kyoto. It's a big green mountain full of trees and monkeys and temples all over. There were just jillions of temples, mostly Rinzai type and Tendai type. Tendai is more esoteric. Rinzai is koan study. So that was all going on. There was Zen going on, and that was his, he had the koan study temple. The teacher there died, but the assistant teacher, the next one, Myozan and Dogen, decided that they weren't getting enough there. Dogen had a big question, because the teaching there was all beings are enlightened. All have Buddha nature. And Dogen kept asking, if we all have Buddha nature, why are we doing all this stuff? Why don't we just go home and hang out? And they really couldn't answer. Nobody could give them a satisfactory answer. So they did a very dangerous thing. They took a ship and went to China, which in those days was very precarious, and they almost capsized many times. And then he spent quite a long time there. He traveled around with Myozan. And Myozan unfortunately passed away while he was in China with Dogen. But Dogen stayed for 10 years doing Rinzai practice again in all the different temples that he found, and none of them were really satisfactory either. It was the same kind of thing. He felt like there just was something else he wasn't finding with anybody. And finally, he had just about given up when he went to one more temple, and that was where Tendo Nyojo was the master. And Dogen practiced with him then. And it began to clarify for him. He was 2 years there. The story is that he was sitting, and the teacher came behind and whacked another monk with a slipper and told him to straighten up. And with the whack of the slipper, Dogen, boom, something happened, and he understood something. He stayed there for a couple of years, and then took the trip back to Japan and just stayed alone for 2 years practicing. Often that happens, I think. People kind of confirm in their practice before getting involved in a social kind of way. He he right away wrote his very first piece right when he got back, Fukanta Zengi, which is instructions on how to sit. And if you haven't read it, I recommend it highly. It's very important, and it's mostly sit down on a cushion and arrange your legs and your hands and breathe and see what happens. When he was 35 years old, people started coming to sit with him in Kyoto, and he became rather popular, and it became a problem with the other temples. They didn't like his flavor of Zen, and there was a kind of political business going on that persuaded him to move away. And he moved into the mountains, quite far away and quite far up in the mountains, in a place that was called eventually Eheji, which is the great, it's like going to Rome if you go there now, it's huge. When he was there, it was a very small little place, very modest, and just a few monks who had monks and nuns gathered there with him. So he avoided all the political hoo-ha and had a chance to figure out how to create a practice that was really sturdy and long-lasting. They had a very strict kind of practice. They got up terribly early in the morning, and it was cold up there, and they worked very, very hard, very, very dedicated to the practice. And he began writing. The first things that he wrote after Fukanta Zengi were the little chapter on the Heart Sutra. Again, that's very wonderful thing to check out. And the Genjo. He wanted his basic understanding to be preserved and shared. And so those two, plus Bendoa, he also wrote Bendoa, or offered Bendoa to mostly lay people. And that is more about, it's a different kind of way of thinking about practice, a little more superficial. Genjo is the most basic one. So he was in the mountains for not so terribly long, a few years before he became very sick with TB. And finally went to town. Someone took him to town to get help, but he passed away there. So he was 51, I think. He was pretty young when he passed away, but there was enough. He gave enough. He gave more than enough, so that it's been sustained since all this time, and it's what we've inherited. Shohaku starts with explaining what Genjo Koan means, because it's a funny sound. It doesn't sound like anything we know. And it's a kind of complicated description of the various meanings of the words, and I'm just going to say that the basic understanding of Gen is actualizing potential. So you could say that everything that's born and alive in the earth is actualizing a potential, that we ourselves are born with a potential, and then we begin to move and breathe and live it. So it's, you could say again, to appear and become in the present moment. That's really what's happening with us. Every single minute, we're just appearing and being right now. We appear to each other, we appear to ourselves, we appear to the books and the chairs, and it's really very odd. The jo is accomplish. So it's accomplishing appearing and becoming. Actually doing it. And koan we think we know because it's a practice of Rinzai Zen. And Dogen obviously had a huge background in it because he studied at those temples. But he used them all the way through Shogo Genzo, all the way through his writings, in new ways. You see those old koans showing up in his writing over and over again, and he tweaks them and twists them and turns them into amazing insights that you would never think. So instead of having a question, what is a one hand clapping, and then a secret answer, it's not like that. He saw koans as being able to reveal a mind, the mind. So ko also means it's public, a kind of public making everything even. It's like a democratic idea. Everybody's the same. And on is a document. So Genjo Koan is really a document about this potential to appear and accomplish our life. So he says koans are expressions of unchangeable truth or reality. And express the equality of all things and the particularity of all things. But the universal also. And this is the basic conundrum that we study over and over. It's in the Heart Sutra. It's everywhere that we begin to really look at life. That there is a particularity, is the reality of our life. There is you and there is me. There is Eric and there is everybody else. But there is also one time, one space, one being, simultaneously. So that he uses a wonderful example. He uses a hand. And he said, each finger of the hand is an individual and considers itself to be unique and to have a very special role in life. And isn't even aware, you might think, of being a part of a hand. It's just its own self, and it's flapping around and doing what it does. And it's a revelation to it to realize that, oh my goodness, I'm part of a hand. And then you have to think, excuse me, but the hand is just a little part of the whole thing. And the whole thing is just a little part of everything. So it's about that. It's very particular and it's huge. We're very particular and we're huge. And the Genjo is about that. It's about living it, enacting it, and expressing both of them in one action. Often our actions are kind of by the way. And so this is pointing to another way of a way of being aware as we move and change and touch and lift and do our life. So we hear it in the Heart Sutra all the time, of course. Form is emptiness. Emptiness is form. Emptiness does not mean empty. It does not mean a vacuum with nothing in it. It means the whole connectedness of it. And form is each individual shape, you could say. So it's the same notion, the same vision, that each form is a part of the whole. And the whole is so big we can't even identify it, except to bow. So he starts with three statements, and they're the most basic statements, really, of all. And they might confuse you because it says three different things about one thing. The first one is, when all dharmas are the Buddha Dharma, there's delusion and realization, practice, life and death, Buddhas and living beings. When all dharmas are the Buddha Dharma, everything is just the way we think it is. There's delusion and realization, all the things that we practice, work so hard on. The second one is, when the 10,000 dharmas are without a fixed self, there is no delusion and no realization, no Buddhas and no living beings and no birth and no death. That's the same no that we chant in the Heart Sutra. No form, no feeling, no perception, no thought. Because each of those things is an idea in the mind. So there's another side in which our view is without words, without concepts. It's simply experienced by itself. And then the third one, since the Buddha way by nature goes beyond the dichotomy of abundance and deficiency, there is arising and perishing, delusion and realization, living beings and Buddhas. So actually, the Buddha way is seen basically as how we see things. Arising and perishing, illusion and living beings and Buddhas. It's how how we practice with the two sides. We say in Zen sometimes not one, not two, because they're not really two sides. It just seems like in the way our mind works. But really, it's just different views. It's like turning something around and looking at it in different ways. So that's our start. And there might be questions. Are you all getting the book? That will be helpful.
I'm not sure which one it was at the time of the email.
Thank Wendy for that. Yeah. Well, it's a beautiful book. Alan?
When I was reading through it this afternoon, I noted in those first three lines that the first one used capital B Buddha, capital D Dharma, and I was listening to a talk that Shohaku gave at Zen Center, a video. He went into kind of a long explanation about how capital D Dharma was sort of like the enlightenment type, you know,
yes,
realization, and how non-capital, lowercase Dharma was sort of the teachings.
Mm-hmm.
And then I noticed in here that the first line had the capital Dharma, and then the 10,000 was the smaller,
yes,
lowercase, and it began to give me a little bit of confusion, but is that the way you understand it?
The way I understand it is capital D Dharma is the truth,
yeah,
or the law, they say. It's that overall truth of all things.
Mm-hmm.
And little D Dharma is everything, all the little bits and pieces of the world.
Mm-hmm.
So I hadn't heard that it was teaching, but that's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess I, somewhere along the line, I was taught by somebody, Dharma, well, I think it's in a book, but about Buddhist philosophy, Dharma is just like a unit, you know, of,
yes,
existence. Which is very interesting to me because I recently read about some theoretical quantum mathematician. You know, I'm not going to go into it. Basically, if you get pretty small, if you get small enough,
yes,
interesting things happen. But so that's my understanding.
It's a lot of energy in it.
Yeah. But I was like, also up there. I always wondered, what are the koan, you know? So I actually looked it up. A gong, like a piece of wood, and if you do the etymology of it, like, I look at it, it's a plank or a piece of wood, and I look like, what the heck does that mean? But I guess outside the temple, they would have
announcements.
They would have announcements.
Yes.
It was like, so that's where the gong came from. And the an is like a kind of a thing.
Yes.
So that's like a little notice put up on the bulletin board outside of the temple.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, they did a lot of that.
That's interesting.
They if you read Dogen's little talks in that collection, or other collections too, he describes how you start a practice period, and the first thing you do is read what's posted on a piece of wood, and then that changes as the practice period goes on, and changes if they're going to have tea and their announcements that way. So, yeah, it's very odd, but that's what language does. It keeps morphing and turning into. Yes. Yes.
But then you have to live it.
Yes, you do. And in koan practice, you have to live it. Yes. It's not a thought thing.
I'm glad we chose this.
Good.
I've never really studied it before. Even though I've heard it, I've never studied it.
Excellent. Roman.
Kind of what jumped out for me on these first three lines was the third one. I see this pointing at samsara, this dichotomy of abundance and deficiency.
Yes.
Arising. I think that's what it's pointing at there for
yes.
me.
Yes.
and that's you know, that's where I exist, and that's, you know, in that realm of samsara. And the hand and the fingers, I think, is really what I highlight in this chapter, the meaning of Genda Koan. He ties it together in the last paragraph here,
mm-hmm.
where he says, in my understanding, this teaching of individuality and universality, which is the hand and the fingers,
yes.
Is the essence of the title Genda Koan. Genjo is nothing other than koan, and koan is nothing other than genjo. And then it gets real tricky after that, but to answer the question from true reality through the practice of our everyday activity. Mm-hmm. I read this and I think I need to find a hermitage of my own and leave everything behind, but mm-hmm. I'm so attached to my family.
No, the only thing you need to do is just pay real close attention. It's all about being really present where you are, when you are. And you can be anywhere. Yeah.
The clock that says now, whatever.
Yes.
I saw it on a CD program last night.
I like that. Well, it's 8 o'clock, so we have a sit coming up next week. Is that right?
Saturday,
a half-day sit on Saturday. But we're going to celebrate Buddha's birthday and offer flowers. So if you all have flowers, bring them. And we'll chant the Heart Sutra, and one by one come up, and there'll be a vase or two, and we'll just put them in. And it duplicates, in a way, Buddha's birth, when a sweet rain fell and many, many flowers to honor him and clean him up. So it's a springtime celebration. Okay. Anything else? Let's do our 1 minute sit.